chapter 6, we see the opening of the seals. Remember, we were talking about the seals and that scroll that John saw in heaven that no one could open, and he was crying, and then Jesus Christ stood up and said, I can open the scroll, and he held the scroll, and he's about to open up the seals of the scroll. And here we find in chapter 6 and verse number 1, Sean.
And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four beasts saying, come and see.
Okay, as we see here, the Lamb, Jesus Christ, began the process of opening the seals here. And we remember that he is the only one that was worthy to open the seals. That's why John was crying. He says, there's nobody worthy to open it. And no one in heaven and earth could open the seals, but Jesus Christ was the one that was worthy. And he is in the throne room of heaven. And when the seal broke, there was a sound heard. All right, did you notice that sound? It was a loud rumble like thunder sounded. And then one of the four living creatures say, come and see. All right, remember the beast that he mentions here in Revelation. We're going to see two different kinds of beasts as we dig our way through the book. But the ones in the start of the book are these living creatures, the ones that were probably seraphim or something like that, that were around the throne of God. The later on, the beasts will be ferocious beasts, but these, at the beginning here, are these living creatures that are around the throne of God. And this begins the 70th week of Daniel. In Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 to 27 deal with this 70th week, and the tribulation period is that 70th week of the prophecy of Daniel, and it begins soon after the rapture when the man of sin will be revealed. There in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, remember, it says that he that letteth will let until he is taken out of the world. Well, that word let there, it means to restrain. And so the one who is restraining will restrain until he's taken out of the way. We believe that's speaking of the Holy Spirit. And at the rapture, the believers will be taken away, and the Spirit of God that's living in them will also no longer be in an active work in that same light in man as he is now. And then the Son of Man, the Antichrist, was going to be revealed at that time. And the Antichrist will be make a peace contract with Israel. I want to read Daniel chapter 9 and verse number 27, just so we can get the context of it. Daniel chapter 9 and verse number 27. It says, and he shall confirm the covenant, right, this is the covenant that he makes with Israel, with many for 1 week. All right, now it's not talking about a week of days, but a week of years. All right, so the 7 years there, 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice of the oblation to cease, for the overspreading of the abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. All right, so here it's speaking of the contract that the Antichrist will make with Israel, and in the midst of that week, he's going to break the contract, and it's a peace contract that trying to keep peace in the world. And you know, the events that are happening in Israel right now, as things are stirring up more actively, we can't help but see that the Lord's getting ready to return. Things are not good in Israel right now, and the enemies are attacking and approaching, and there's turmoil and the struggles there. But the Antichrist is going to bring this peace contract that'll calm things down temporarily. And the tribulation judgments are against those who have rejected Christ. So as we look at the tribulation period, we ask ourselves, well, what's that for? Well, these are judgments against those who've rejected the Lord. And so there's going to be a lot of suffering. And as we work our way through here, we're going to see a little bit of the introduction to that this evening. But there's a lot of suffering. Now, one thing that's important for us to see here is that the tribulation judgments are all contained in the sealed scroll. Right, now, as you look at this chart here, right, the seals, the seventh seal opens up the seven trumpets. And the seventh trumpet opens up the seven bowls. So they're really all contained in the seals. So when the seventh seal opens, then all these next things start to take place, and it just unfolds its way through as we follow in through the book. So that kind of gives us an idea of what is taking place. But these are three sets of judgments that God's going to pour out during those 7 years of tribulation, during that 7 year time. Now, he opens the first seal, verse number 2.
And I saw, and behold, a white horse. And he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer.
Okay, now, as you look at this, several significant things here. He's riding on a white horse. Now, the white horse was typically a symbol of victory. Right, it's a victor's type of a horse. Christ is going to be riding on a white horse. Victors would often do that. So it's a symbol of victory. And then we see that he's counterfeiting Christ. You know, the Antichrist, the son of man, or son of sin, man of sin, sorry. He is a world dictator described there in Daniel 9, as we saw in verse 27, who will appear as a peaceful leader. Now, just picture in your mind, you know, we remember very vividly some of the almost unbelievable events that took place when COVID hit. I mean, it would, in a very short time, the whole world was, you know, in a lockdown, and they were forcing us to do things that you think, how could they possibly do that? But they did. And can you imagine in your mind if thousands, hopefully millions, of Christians suddenly disappeared? There's going to be chaos like never before. And something's going to have to happen to calm things down. And it seems like it's going to be the Antichrist that steps in as a peaceful leader and calms things down, gets things under control, makes this peace contract with Israel because there's all that turmoil in Israel, and try to calm things down and bring peace to the world and settle things down. And so here's the description of him. He rides in with his horse, his white horse, and there's victory. The bow with no arrows probably represents a bloodless victory. You know, if you have a bow and arrow, a bow without an arrow doesn't do any good. And an arrow without a bow doesn't do you too much good. But here he speaks of a bow, but he doesn't mention any of the arrows. So probably speaking there of a bloodless victory, and the victor's crown will be given to him. The crown that is mentioned here is not a king's crown, it's a victor's crown. And so the whole picture here is that he is going to be a great victor, a conqueror, a peacemaker, a great leader that will calm things down. And he will go out conquering and to conquer throughout the world. So he's a great conqueror there. He will deceive the world with his great deceptions. And he wants to become the final victor of the world. You know, Satan is working through this Antichrist. And Satan has had it his agenda since the beginning to be God and to be in control of things. And God has kept him under control. And when Christ died on the cross, he defeated Satan. But Satan is still on the loose. And Satan is determined that he's going to work through the Antichrist and to cause grief and troubles here. Matthew chapter 24 and verses 4 and 5, he speaks of being deceitful and how he's going to deceive the world, and if it were possible that even he could even deceive the elect. The idea is he's very, very deceptive in his activities. And so, well, we see next that the rapture will spark this world panic, and the Antichrist will deceitfully calm the world and take control. And so, just as we saw with COVID, only on a greater scale, the Antichrist is going to step up and calm things down and bring peace, settle things down, and take control of things. And there'll be probably all kinds of new laws and rules that are passed to control things, like we saw already happened, but more on a grander scale. And as he tries to take control of the world, well, actually does take control of the world for the most part. I mean, God's still ultimately in control, but he is greatly influencing that. All right. Then, next I want us to take a look at the chart that I've designed of the tribulation period. Now, as we look at this, let me say right to the beginning here, I've made a note here. I personally believe that the first seal will cover the first half of the tribulation. My reason for this is because peace ends with the second seal. I know. I'll tell you right up front. Most commentators disagree with me. Okay? Most of them disagree with me on that. And I'm not denying that. But you look at that, and they say that it's going to be a peaceful time during this first seal. But as soon as you get to the second seal, the first thing it says is that he takes peace from the world. So, and all of the tremendous troubles that come from this, even the second seal onward, you think, how could that possibly be during a time of peace? But it could be, alright? I may be wrong, I'm just telling you how I've see it there, and that's how I've laid that out there. But you see, in the red up in the top, there is the mystery of Babylon, the great religious Babylon, and that's during the first half. The second half, the Antichrist is worshipped as God, Revelation 13, and the big blue stripe across the top there is Babylon the Great, Antichrist's world economic system. So all this is dealing with the systems of the world during the tribulation period. And then we got the seals and the various things down here. Now, in chapter, the information chapters over on the side, the Alpha, chapter 1 is the Alpha and Omega, chapter 2 and 3 are the seven churches. Chapter 5 was the worthy lamb, and it's chapter 7 is 144,000 witnesses, and 10 is it talks about a little book we're going to get into later, and 11 is the two witnesses, and then 12 the five actors, and 13 is two actors, and then 14 is six scenes, and 15 is the bowl preparation. So these are all information chapters that really don't move it forward. It's just giving us information about it. So this is the whole. Just lets us see the whole thing, and then at the end, Christ comes back in chapter 19 at the Battle of Armageddon, and then there's going to be the 1,000-year kingdom with Christ. Devil's cast into the bottomless. He's in the bottomless pit during this time, but then the beast and the false prophet are in the lake of fire, and then Satan will be cast into the lake of fire at the end of the millennial kingdom, and then eternity here. So it's just a little bit of a layout. For those of you who don't follow maps and stuff, maybe it doesn't mean much to you, but it helps my map type mind to see something of this nature to just kind of lay it out. Any questions about this before I move on to the next? Okay, if you'd like a copy of this, just let me know. I'm happy to send you, send it to you as an email. That's fine. Okay, verses 3 and 4.
And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, "Come and see." And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword.
Okay, so here we see there's a red horse now. The first horse was white, now we got a red horse. And the red horse symbolizes the shedding of blood, and the Antichrist will break his peace contract. So there's not going to be peace anymore. Perhaps this will mark the halfway point of the tribulation. This is where I get my theory. And again, it's only a theory, and it really doesn't change anything about the book of Revelation except just the order of things, all right? So it doesn't change what's in it, it just changed the order of things. So that's my theory. And the rider was carrying a great sword, and that the peace promised by the Antichrist will now end. The Antichrist will reveal his true character in the middle of the tribulation. So all of these things are why I believe that that's a strong possibility. The second seal greatly resembles the predicted wars in Matthew 24, verse 6. And I know there's a lot of differences of opinion in Matthew 24, which verses are talking about the tribulation, which are talking about things before the tribulation. But all I'm saying here is that there is a great resemblance there. All right, so whatever those verses actually are referring to, there is certainly a resemblance. Okay, so this is the second seal, the red horse. The next one in verses 5 and 6.
And when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, "Come and see." And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, "A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny. And see thou hurt not the oil and the wine."
Okay. Now, as we look here, the rider this time is on a black horse, and he's carrying balances. Right? And when we're talking about balances, any of you kids know what the balances are? Okay. The balances were scales. Right? So you see some pictures of the old-time scales where they'd have you know, the thing in the middle, and they'd have one on each side. And so what they would do in the olden days is they'd take, if you were going to buy 1 kilo of something, they'd had a weight that weighed a 1 kilo. They'd put the weight on that one side, and then they'd put your grain on this side, and as soon as it balanced out level, then there was a kilo on both sides, and then that was your amount to buy. So that was how they did it before they had the electronic scales and all that kind of stuff. So this is the scales. Now, the scales are picturing here, these balances are for weighing food that was for sale. And the food would be rationed because of the great famine. So as Brother Sean read, there's going to be great famine during this time. Now, famine is when there's no food. There's just people won't have enough to eat. And so they're going to have to ration the food, weigh it out. All right, you can only have this much food, and you can't have any more. A voice announces the shortness of this food. All right, so there's going to be this great problem here of lack of food. In addition to rationing food, the prices will be inflated dramatically. I mean, remember back in the Elisha's day. I'm trying to get the right guys. Was it Elisha? I think it was Elijah. Anyway, when there was a great famine there in Samaria, and the food was gone, and the people were starving. Do you remember some of the troubles they were having? It got so bad that the people started eating all kinds of gross things. They would sell bird manure for a huge price to eat. And they would sell donkey's heads for an enormous price to eat. And then the ones that didn't have any money, they started eating their own kids. It's disgusting. But they were starving hungry. And they're going to have a lot of these same kind of troubles here in the tribulation period. So the prices are going to be inflated. And he talks about a measure or a scoop of wheat and 3 scoops of barley will sell for a penny. Now, a penny represented a whole day's wages. Can you imagine working all day long just to get a scoop of grain that you could make enough porridge for your family for the day? And then you have to work all day tomorrow to get enough to just barely get enough to eat. So it was a terrible time of famine. This judgment will not hurt the wealthy, though, if we understand the next term right. The phrase, the oil and the wine, may describe the rich. In time of famine, both oil and wine were luxury items that only the rich could afford to buy. Right? So if you wanted these things, you had to have extra money. They weren't the necessities of life. You needed the grain, you needed the meat or the vegetables to feed your soul and your family, and these things were extras. But there's some debates on what it might mean, but it seems like there's a good possibility that when he refers to the oil and the wine, he's talking about the wealthy people are the only ones that are able. Peter?
What's the symbolism of the black horse? The first one is the victory, the second one is bloodshed. What's the significance of the black?
Okay, the famine. You see, even in countries where there's great famine and there's not enough to eat, and a lot of times the people's skins turn dark, that's the only thing I can tell you. John Ray?
I think it's kind of funny because, like, and we're so used to it in Western developed nations, but, I mean, there's still billions of people in the world who work a whole day just for a tiny, like, just a bowl of rice. I mean, it's one of those things, I guess we forget that sometimes, but to have that on a global scale would be unusual, but it's not unusual to see that, though, today. But to have it on a global scale, I think, would be unusual.
That is sad, though, when you think about that, to work all day long just to feed your family.
But there are billions of people every day.
Mm. So, then as we move on, verses 7 and 8, to the pale horse.
And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beast of the earth.
Okay, so pale horse. All right, and Peter, you can come up with a good reason it's pale. I don't know. Yeah, it's a palish. The color here is a greenish pale, right? The actual color was a greenish pale color. So I don't know. Maybe it's just referring to the death. I don't know. But the writer is death followed by hell. Alright, the idea here is that the judgments will cause widespread death, and hell follows along to receive those that are taken by death. It's a tragic time. There's going to be a lot of people dying here. A fourth of the world's population is going to die. Alright? So, right now, I haven't seen recent statistics, but I know we're pushing toward 8 billion. Is that right? So we're getting close to 8 billion. Alright? So if there's a quarter of it, you know, to have 2 billion people die, it's a lot of people. And so, all at once, there's going to be masses of people that die. And death will kill it using four means. The sword, hunger, death, maybe by sickness, cold, or fallout, who knows, and beasts. So these four things are going to cause death. There's going to be wars, so there's a lot of people dying with a sword, or in battle, guns, whatever you want to call it. Then there's going to be hunger, people starving to death. And then it just says death. Well, you think about that, how many kinds of ways would they die? You know, probably through sickness or cold, you know, freezing to death or even fallout or things of that nature.
So the word sword is such a generic term referring to warfare. It doesn't necessarily mean literally just a sword.
Well, maybe...
You see the term used in the Bible stuff, doesn't it? It kind of seems like it's a generic word.
All right, once again, the book of Revelation... John was describing it the best he could in his own terminology. And I mean, when it talks about the sword, it's talking about a violent weapon to use against people.
In the context, it's saying warfare. It's just telling us.
I think so. Because to say that it was literally swords that they had to be using, not too many people are using swords these days. They would use all kinds of warfare, guns and bombs and all of that kind of stuff. So I think it's probably a generic term for the warfare, but, you know, any other questions or comments? All right, good. And then this will be a terrible, terrible judgment that is coming on that day. It's unbelievable. Verses 9 to 11.
And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God, and for the testimony which they herald. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And white robes were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little season, until their fellow servants also and their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled.
Okay, this is a very interesting seal. As we look at this one here, the scene shifts from earth to heaven, and we see that the souls of the martyrs that are under the altar, evidently in the temple in heaven, were crying out to the Lord. And they were killed during the tribulation because they had preached the word of God and testified for God. So these are martyrs. Martyrs are those who die for their faith. So they died for the faith, and they are there in heaven, watching what is taking place, waiting for the judgments to come, knowing that there is judgment coming, but not really knowing God's timing on this. And they're asking God to, how long are you going to wait, God? How long? How long? When are you going to wipe them out? And they're crying for God's full judgment. And they ask God how long before he avenges this. Now, God gave each of them white robes, so in verse 11, and he told them that they must rest yet a little season. Or in other words, wait a little while longer. Wait a little bit longer. It's not yet. And the other fellow servants and brethren must die before God could avenge their blood. Now, this last phrase is one that you really have to think about it. What God said is, I don't want to send judgment yet because there's other Christians that need to die first, and then I will pour out my judgment on those who killed them. You know, sometimes we look at martyrdom, we look at persecution as bad. And I'm not saying it isn't bad. I'm not lining up and saying me next. Alright? But God looks at it as glorifying to Him. When martyrs lose their life for Christ, God is greatly glorified. John Ray.
It's also important to note that, I mean, this is one reason God holds back, but the Bible says, you also read in Revelation that the angels are proclaiming the gospel all throughout the tribulation of, you know, in the heavens, and they're proclaiming the gospel. And this, during this time, God's also still waiting for people to be saved. I mean, not everybody during that time is going to take part for the feast. There's still opportunity for many to get saved.
Yeah, we'll see. In the chapters ahead, that there will be 144,000 witnesses, and there will be two special witnesses from heaven, and they are proclaiming that too. So, yes, John Reed does have a point there. That's not just waiting for others to die, but there's also the aspect of waiting for others to be saved. All right, Joe?
These people that he's talking about, would they be the 144,000? The church is gone. There's 144,000 that go out early in the tribulation. Right, 144,000. Now they're all martyred. You know, the Bible tells us that.
Well, not at this point.
Saints. Not at this point. No.
No.
Well, at this point, yeah, because you know, part of them have died already because their souls are up in heaven under the altar.
Well,
he says, wait a little while to the rest.
No, what I'm saying is, I don't think the 144,000 had died yet, but those who they had witnessed to, there's going to be a lot of people saved during the tribulation period,
mm-hmm.
Through the witness of the 144,000 and others that were proclaiming Christ.
But the 144,000, they're all killed in the end anyway.
But later on, because we're still in the very early parts of it, I doubt it was them. I mean, because we're in the opening parts of the book of the tribulation, it would seem, you know, more likely what you said there was toward the end.
You know, you've got Antichrist coming on, you know, in a peaceful manner. Then he starts the war. Then there's death, and then there's famine and destruction and all that. That's a picture of him, right? And it's a big picture of what's going to happen throughout. Then it gets into the nitty gritty as we go along.
Yes, and so as the trumpets and the bowls open up, they kind of they seem like they almost overlap in a sense, but they obviously get worse and worse as it goes through too as well.
Do you believe the 144,000 are going to come in the early stages of the tribulation? The church is taken, 144,000 go out preaching.
Exactly when, I don't know that the scriptures tell us. So it'd be just my guess compared to your guess. If we're going by the...
After these things, he saw the four angels standing on the four corners of the earth. That's when they're talking about the 12,000 that were sealed from each tribe of Israel.
They're all Jews.
Yes, but he said, as she pointed out, it says after these things. So I don't think it's going to be right at the very start, but again, it's just an unknown.
It's also interesting, by the description of the 144,000, it seems like, from what you read about them, that they're all young men who are virgins. It's not any like women or children.
No.
Old guys. That's what it's like. Sound like 144,000 young guys.
Yeah.
It tells you.
So, well, we'll get into more of that when we...
They're certainly not Seventh-day
the jokers. No, I don't think so.
No.
Definitely not that. All right, verses 12 to 17.
Stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man, hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?
Okay, so as we see here, the sixth seal opens up, and there's a great earthquake, violently shakes the earth. And the quake will rock the entire earth. You know, you think about that. I mean, different earthquakes that have shaken countries. Like when we were in Papua New Guinea, we went through a few earthquakes. And, you know, it would shake everything. The whole house would rattle and things would fall off the shelves and all that kind of stuff. But it didn't happen everywhere. I mean, even down, you know, a few kilometers away, they didn't feel it near like we did or whatever. And so, but this, we're talking about something that's going to shake the entire globe. And it's going to be a worldwide catastrophe. And it says that the sun and the moon and the stars will change in appearance. They're going to look like they're dark. And then the meteorites fall to the earth. Yeah, and he talks about that, these meteors coming down here like untimely figs when the tree is shaken. And you know, you stop and think about that. If you took a tree like that, and I've never tried it on a fig tree because I don't want them to fall off, but as a boy, we used to have wild apple trees that were sour or weren't good to eat. And sometimes, just for fun, we'd grab on a branch and just shake it violently. And it just comes falling down like, you know, rain with all these apples that come falling down. And that's the kind of picture he's given us here of these meteorites coming. I mean, if a few meteorites hit the earth, you know, that makes big noise and big news. But when you got lots of them falling and hitting the earth, it's going to be a traumatic time. And then the sky will depart like the rolling up of the scroll, possibly pollution from the disasters that are blocking the sky. That's a possibility. And when all these things take place, there's very likely going to be volcanoes and eruptions and all kinds of things that are going along with the quaking. I mean, when the earth starts quaking like that, it's going to break things up and very likely going to set off volcanoes and things. And when they shoot their soot into the air, many times, you know, when there's been massive volcanoes, the sky goes black and dark. And yes, Jenner?
It's interesting that you mentioned the sky rolling up like a scroll, because if you've ever seen even recently, this mega volcano that went off recently, they had satellite images. The shockwave is so big that, like, for thousands of kilometers, there's just like a circular perimeter where the clouds just get pushed away by the gases. I mean, just rolling away. So if you had like an asteroid or a comet hitting Earth, that would absolutely roll all the clouds away. I mean, like, literally, it would look, John was saying, it would look like they're rolling away.
Yeah, and that's what he's picturing here. So these catastrophes, all that's involved here, what we can say for sure is it's not going to be good. It's going to be very, very serious. Every mountain and island will be moved. You know, you think about that. When God says that all of the mountains will be moved, shaken by this, this is massive, 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 the likes of which have never been seen since the flood. I mean, I think during the flood, there was probably a lot of the same kind of thing that took place because of the change of topography and things that took place during the flood. But this is going to be a scale that was unbelievable. And men will greatly fear God. Men of every status. He mentions here a whole different groups of men, chief captains and mighty men, bondmen and freemen. And they all hide themselves in dens and in the mountains. I had these dens. I looked at the word dens. It refers to a cave. And so they're hiding themselves in the dens or the caves and in the rocks. And so it says they were in the caves and in the rocks. Well, some people say, well, probably hiding down amongst the rocks. That's a possibility. But the word literally is the word ice that means into. So it sounds more like these are more caves that are down into the mountains. They're trying to hide from God in the mountains. Seems to me that when everything's shaking, a cave wouldn't be the smartest place to get. But they're hiding on God and they're begging these rocks to fall on them. And they want to die, but God's not allowing them to die. And they will not be able to escape the wrath of God. Very, very bad time. And this is just the beginning of the tribulation. This is just the opening up of the first six seals. And things are going to get worse and worse as it progresses through. John Ray.
The thing that has always been a bit complicated to understand is that we're told that the Antichrist, for the first few years, he'll be famous because he brings peace to the world, seemingly so. But at the same time, you have all this tribulation. So you have a time of peace and a time of tribulation at the same time. How?
See, that's why, John Ray, that's why my theory is that the first seal takes place in the first half. And then starting with the second seal, when the peace ends, then all this takes place during the second half. That's my theory, but it's only a theory. And if that's true, then as Joseph just pointed out a moment ago, then these fifth, sixth, and seals would be further down into the tribulation period. And so perhaps some of these martyrs were, martyred there during that time. So there's a lot of things we don't know. Putting it together, trying to sort it all out, it takes, some imagination sometimes. And, when God doesn't tell us for sure, and it doesn't really matter, we can have our own opinions and think about it. But
Antichrist would be famous in the world because he's really good at damage control or something.
Well, Antichrist plays a huge part. He goes nearly right through.
Yeah.
You see, even to the middle, which is the abomination of desolation, that's 3.5 years into it.
Yeah, so he's going to be making the big piece at the start, and then he's going to break his contract, and then from then on, he's going to take control. Because the first half, he was just kind of leading, but then in the second half, he's going to be dominating.
And the second half is called the Great Tribulation.
Yes, yes, and the... We saw that in the first diagram there earlier. All right, some practical applications. The events of the first six seals here are the Antichrist will rule the world, the peaceful promise that will end with bloodshed, the famine will torment unbelievers, the death in hell will overcome a quarter of the world's population, martyrs will cry for vengeance, and that God will shake the earth like never before. If you are a true Christian, you need to not fear. This isn't something we need to fear because we're not going to be there. True Christians are not going to have to go through this. Those who believe that the rapture will take place after the tribulation, I feel sorry for them. I don't see that. I see God rescuing us before the time of wrath and taking us out of this world. And there's going to be a lot of hardship, but if you're not a true Christian, you need to trust Christ today because things are not going to get any better. And we have never, ever been, and I can say this safely because maybe it's just an empty statement, but we've never been closer to this time than it is right now. And, that's the truth. But Paul could have said that 2,000 years ago. But we look at the things that are taking place around us and we see so much of it unfolding and it's looking so much like it's coming, and we need to be prepared.